Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, March 12, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Our History, Stories of World War II Champions Soar. Tuskegee Airmen, Women Air Force Service Exhibit, Visiting Decatur, by Danette Beckett. Marvin and Mona Sowers often listened to her father's stories about World War II. So we've always had this affinity for learning more about it, Marvin Sowers said. The couple visited the commemorative Air Force Rise Above Mobile exhibit on its opening day at the Macon County History Museum. We wanted to see how this related to Decatur, Marvin Sowers said. It's part of our history. The trailer will be parked at the museum, 5580 North Fork Road, Decatur, until Sunday, March 15th. The free exhibit offers two 15-minute documentaries telling the story of Tuskegee Airmen and women Air Force service pilots. We welcome everyone, said Chris Allen, commemorative Air Force Rise Above exhibit director. It's child-friendly, but it's not childish. The mobile unit often stops at air shows and other historic aviation events. The next stop will be March 17th and 18th at the Rantoul Airport with an added feature, a B-51 Mustang airplane. It was the one the Tuskegee Airmen became famous in. So we would use it to tell their story, said Don Larson, CAR road commander. Information on the CAF updates and events on the programs can be found on the organization's website. Wherever there's an appetite for the stories that we're telling, we try to find a way in, Allen said. Macon County History Museum Director Nathan Pierce said he wanted to bring the program to Decatur because of its historic association with the city. The local museum previously created a similar WASP exhibit. I'm kind of interested in aviation, he said. I thought this might be kind of neat, given we've got a direct connection to the community. According to the Macon County Museum's research, 12 women from the Decatur area went to Washington, D.C. to interview for the WASP program during World War II. Seven qualified and came home to wait for the call. Macon County had two documented WASPs, Geraldine Fulk Crook and Jane Tallman. The program lasted less than a year and a half, but the WASP flew over 60 million miles in that time period, freeing up male pilots to fight the war overseas. Confirming the women's contribution can be difficult, Allen said, because they were civil service, not military, he said. So the records weren't preserved with the same fidelity as the airmen. Decatur has a connection as well with the Tuskegee Airmen. Ellsworth Dansby was the second black aviator allowed into the Army Air Corps during World War II and became one of the Tuskegee Airmen, the first all-black military aviator company in the United States Army Air Corps, which later became the Air Force. In 2023, the Decatur School Board named its newest building Ellsworth Dansby Jr. Magnet School. According to the CAF directors, the visiting exhibit focuses on the two World War II aviation programs because they are often unfamiliar to many who are learning about the war. We champion these stories because they're integral to World War II story. But they aren't necessarily frontline news, Allen said. They're people that didn't just have to fight for one victory, they had to fight for two. The Tuskegee Airmen and the WASPs aided in the battles against the Axis overseas, which included Germany, Italy, and Japan. They also battled for recognition at home, the directors pointed out. That's why we tell their stories, Allen said. We soldier on, sharing it with 40 people at a time. To provide added details, the exterior and interior of the trailer have still images with historical information. The directors also give the students an extra gift, a set of dog tags. They get to carry that with them, and look at when they're playing or when they're supposed to be paying attention in school, Larson said. It's a hands-on thing for kids. Printed on the tokens are the principles the directors say they want to instill in the children. Aim high, believe in yourself, use your brain, never quit, be ready to go, and expect to win. Tuskegee Airmen and WASP Mobile Exhibit. The commemorative Air Force exhibit will be parked in the Macon County History Museum parking lot from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thursday through Sunday, March 12th through 14th. The last movie will start at 3 p.m. For more information on the Tuskegee Airmen and the WASP's display, visit the Macon County History Museum website or Facebook page. Decatur Schools, district to end extended daycare. Clark, program not sustainable as COVID money has dried up. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools is ending its extended day program that offers before and after school care. The program will come to a halt on May 22nd, the last day of this school year. It began in 2021. The extended day program has been provided at no cost to families using temporary federal relief funding made available during the COVID-19 pandemic. As those federal funds have expired, the Board of Education and superintendent have made the decision to discontinue offering the program at the same scale and structure. The district is actively seeking other options for district families for the 2026-27 school year. We were aware that the COVID funds ran out in December, Superintendent Rochelle Clark said. The district agreed to continue the program because we were in the middle of a year. We tried to see if we could sustain it, and we just can't at this level. In an effort to lower costs, the district stopped offering the program to middle school students, except for those who had younger siblings in grades K through 6 who were enrolled in extended day, Clark said. But even that was too costly to sustain at approximately $2 million per year. The program serves 350 to 420 students on any given day, with a long waiting list because staff and costs are not adequate to serve as many as want to attend. Not all students attend both morning and afternoon programs, and some did not attend every day. It was up to the parents to choose the schedule that worked for their family. The district's costs were the same, no matter how many children were in attendance. Parents can drop off their children as early as 6 a.m., and the after-school program lasts until 5:30 p.m. at all of the K through 6 and K through 8 buildings and Pershing Early Learning Center, with afternoon activities that include homework help or skill building if the student has no homework, art, music, physical fitness, recreational activities, and character education. Families can pick up students before 5:30 p.m. if they choose. Clark said she hopes to have a list of options available for district families within a couple of weeks. Programs such as the Decatur Family YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club, for example, that have openings that could absorb some of the students at low cost. She also has been in discussions with companies who could offer similar programs, held in district buildings like the extended day program has been, and at low cost. Information will be posted on the district's website, dps61.org. We're trying to make sure they have all this time, she said. This gives them about 5 months between now and next school year to find alternative care. Extended day was not available during the summer months when school is out, so families' summer child care needs are not a consideration. Clark announced the change, which didn't require a vote, at the school board meeting on Tuesday. The board did grant her authority to pursue alternatives. She has, in the past, worked with a vendor called Champion, which she has been in contact with and which would use district buildings but handle all other operations, hiring, using district staff when possible, background checks, security, storage of materials, etc. They would charge a fee to parents on a sliding scale based on income, and low-income families might not have to pay at all. Another company, Right at School, has a Zoom meeting scheduled with Clark this week to present its options. She plans presentations at the March 24th board meeting to give the school board and the community a look at possible solutions and costs. Families are going to have questions, Clark said. For now, everything will stay status quo. We're going to provide families with options as soon as we can give them. Daycares that have openings in the next couple of weeks. We will post them on the website and they'll be available on the school's websites. We'll try to get them as much information as we can to help them in their efforts. What made us different was it was free to our families, Clark added. Some may be concerned about the next steps on our end, but we have to look at the long-term picture financially. Every year, she said, she works with her executive staff to consider possible budget cuts, and they all realize that extended day would have to be one of those cuts. With a goal of cutting 10% of costs overall for the next year, more cuts are likely. At this point, they haven't been identified where those cuts will be. Announcing the end of extended day was a priority to allow time for families to make other plans. Mawikwa, Chief retires, village police out of officers, by Tony Reed. Mawikwa, there's big trouble in Little Mawikwa. The entire village police department is gone. Police Chief Christopher Hale announced his retirement earlier this month, and he's been joined by five other officers, full and part-time, who have suddenly left for other jobs or just left. The village leadership won't comment directly on the cause of the police department's unexpected demise, but the upheaval comes amid an arresting financial crisis not helped by soaring paid time off and other costs racked up by the officers. The empty squad cars leave the village with no cops of its own and no resource officer stationed at the central A&M schools in town. Shelby County Sheriff Brian McReynolds is scrambling to provide protect and serve cover, but says response times for non-emergencies are inevitably going to see delays. Shelby County is a large county, he said. It's nearly 770 square miles. And you know, if I'm lucky, I have three deputies on, and most of the time, it's two. And Mawikwa happens to be located in our farthest northwest corner of the county. That said, McReynolds said he was doing his best and would call in help from surrounding counties like Macon and Christian to help ease the burden. Dealing with this is going to strain my resources, the sheriff added, and hoped the village mayor and council would get the police department up and running again real quick. The sooner the better, he added. But it may take a while, however. The village council is going through its own shakeup, as Mayor Sean Conlin recently resigned in the wake of the financial upheaval. And at the council's Tuesday night meeting, council member Sean Hayes sent in a letter announcing he had resigned too. The village has had to borrow $30,000 from a fund reserved for development in order to make payroll. Other staff have been cut, and the council is looking to make a series of other cost reductions. Its popular July 4th fireworks display was axed at Tuesday night's meeting unless private funds burst forth to pick up the tab. We're in a financial crunch, said the new mayor, Angela Locke. I have a hard time not doing it, the annual fireworks display, but I also have a hard time doing it. I don't think it's fiscally responsible if we do it, knowing that we're borrowing money from other accounts even to make payroll. Locke has been careful in her comments not to directly blame the village's cash crunch on overspending in the police department. But she told Tuesday's meeting there's going to be some changes required in how the new police chief, whenever they get hired, does the job and runs their department. We intend on staffing our police department, but also maintaining fiscal responsibility, she told the audience packed into the village hall. Locke said she wanted a strong emphasis in the future on community policing and a police chief and officers who were visible in the community. The next chief needs to patrol and get out there, she said. I want them to be out there moving instead of sitting at a desk in a small community like this. Larry Minot, a trustee with the Moequa Fire Department, said firefighters had not been happy with the amount of service and support received under the previous police regime. He said rebuilding the police department from scratch could be an opportunity to create something better. You might think it's a bad situation, but I think it's really going to turn out to be a great opportunity, he said during public comments at the start of Tuesday's meeting. So suck it up and do the best that you can. Longtime resident Marlene Craig said the village's financial situation was depressing, and she did believe the trouble started after overspending in the police department, with too much cash splashed on equipment as well as compensation. Craig says the new mayor is a take-charge person with a strong managerial background as a top administrator with the Illinois Department of Corrections. She believes Locke has the managerial skills to rebuild the police department and wash the red ink out of Moequa's books. I like her, said Craig. She doesn't mess around. Police: shot fired during fight. Cops say teen steps in, separates gun from the altercation. By Tony Reed, Decatur. A 14-year-old Decatur boy is quoted as telling police he broke up a street fight between his grandfather, Ronald L. Green, and another man, after Green had pulled a gun and sent a bullet zipping by the head of his opponent. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the grandson had retrieved the handgun, tossed on the ground by Green, and stowed the weapon in his grandfather's car before police arrived. Green is facing two counts of aggravated assault involving the use and discharge of a deadly weapon, and a further count accusing him of the reckless discharge of a firearm. The affidavit said the fight happened on the afternoon of February 22nd in the 3200 block of Bluebird Drive, when the boy described Green getting into a dispute with a 55-year-old man who lives there. The boy said he saw the man slap Green before his grandfather pulled the gun, and the two of them began wrestling on the front lawn, followed by the sound of a single gunshot. The boy stated that after the firearm went off, Ronald tossed the firearm into the yard, away from the altercation, said Officer Gage Bavona, who signed the affidavit. The boy said he then exited the vehicle and approached Ronald, who he pulled off the other man. He stated he then picked up the firearm from the front yard and placed it into the vehicle that he and Ronald had arrived in, removing it from the situation. Bavona said the 55-year-old man described Green pointing the gun at his head during the fight and warning him, "I'll shoot you." He says he stepped backwards with his hands in the air after the gun went off, but fell over, and Green then grabbed him by the throat before the fight was ended. Bavona said Green, who had left the scene before police arrived, but returned a short term later, refused to say anything until he had spoken with his lawyer. Green is due to appear March 18th in Macon County Circuit Court for a preliminary hearing, when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. Prosecutors petitioned to have him held in custody, but the defendant was granted pretrial release at an arraignment hearing February 23rd. His conditions of release ban him from possessing a gun and order him to have no contact with the man he fought with and to stay away from the man's home. Tornadoes, hail, strike Illinois. Touchdowns near Pontiac, Kankakee. By Hallie Golden, Associated Press with H&R staff. A possible tornado strike just north of Pontiac was among damage reports after several tornadoes tore through parts of Illinois and Indiana Tuesday. Storms pelted much of northern Illinois with hail and downed trees and power lines across the region from western Illinois to Cook and Kankakee counties, according to the National Weather Service and local authorities. According to the Decatur Fire Department, there was heavy rain in Decatur, which caused some flooding of underpasses, some of which resulted in vehicles becoming disabled while attempting to drive through the high water. After 11 p.m. Tuesday, 1-inch hail fell in Tremont and Goodfield, and power lines, utility poles, and traffic lights were toppled in Pekin, South Pekin, and near Green Valley in Tazewell County, and in Havana in Mason County. The NWS Lincoln office reported early Wednesday. A garage and dock were damaged about 4:50 p.m. on 1600 East Road, about a mile north of Pontiac in Livingston County, the Chicago NWS office reported. Baseball-sized hail fell about a mile south of Reddick, which is about 8 miles east of Dwight, and 3.5-inch hail fell near Campus and Cardiff, about 7 miles southeast of Dwight. The National Weather Service listed no damage associated with those reports. 1-inch hail was reported 6 miles southeast of Minonk, according to the NWS office in Lincoln. A tornado touched down near the Kankakee Fairgrounds, about 57 miles south of Chicago, before traveling northeast into Aroma Park, where it caused extensive damage, according to the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office. No injuries have been reported. I want to remind area residents to check on their neighbors and loved ones, but to avoid unnecessary travel, if at all possible, Kankakee County Sheriff Mike Downey said in a statement. In video shared on social media, the Twister is seen ripping across a field of farmland near an airport while vehicles line the road. Softball-size hail was reported in the Kankakee area. Severe storms dumping rain and hail in parts of the Midwest were threatening to bring intense tornadoes, damaging winds, and very large hail from the southern plains to the southern Great Lakes, according to the National Weather Service. States from Texas to Michigan were under tornado watches. Several tornadoes formed across northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana, but the exact number won't be available until officials conduct damage surveys, said Andrew Lyons, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center. He described this as a fairly typical early spring strong storm system. It is expected to continue to move east across parts of the Mid-Atlantic and East Coast Wednesday, likely bringing more severe weather, he said. More than 2 million Americans were at a moderate risk of severe weather in Illinois and Indiana. Nearly 22 million were at a slightly lesser risk in a zone that includes Chicago, Fort Worth, Texas, and Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Just over the Indiana state line, an apparent tornado hit several houses in Lake Village and caused injuries, according to Indiana State Police Corporal Eric Rott. He was not able to provide the number of people injured or their condition. We're still in emergency response mode, he said. Will Illinois get a Gateway Arch Park? U.S. House bill eyes landmark expansion. By Joe Holloman, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, St. Louis. Touting new federal legislation as the best ever chance to expand the Gateway Arch National Park into Illinois, two members of the U.S. House and a host of local luminaries met Tuesday in East St. Louis to celebrate. The reason for rejoicing was a bill introduced in the U.S. House that would include the 50-acre Malcolm W. Martin Park and 20 acres of vacant land to its south in the official national park footprint. This allows the National Park Service to acquire that land and begin expansion, said U.S. Representative Nikki Brzezinski, Democrat, Springfield, Illinois, who represents most of St. Clair County and spearheaded the legislation. Citing the investments made and jobs created by a renovation of the Arch Park grounds in downtown St. Louis, Budzinski said she hopes a Metro East expansion brings some of that development into East St. Louis. Budzinski also noted that the legislation has bipartisan and bi-state support, with U.S. Representative Wesley Bell, Democrat, St. Louis, Ann Wagner, Republican, Baldwin, and Mike Bost, Republican, Murfreesboro, Illinois, all being co-sponsors. She added that U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, both Illinois Democrats, and U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt, a Missouri Republican, have expressed support for sponsoring similar legislation in the Senate. Ryan McClure, executive director of Gateway Arch Park Foundation, said the additional land would give planners flexibility to not only expand park grounds across the river, but also to open up commercial opportunities. "This is a milestone moment for this park, for this region," McClure said. The foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to the preservation of the arch grounds and boosting development in downtown St. Louis. It was behind the $380 million overhaul of the arch grounds, which was finished in 2018. McClure also noted that expanding into East St. Louis was part of the original plan in the 1940s by Eero Saarinen, the architect who designed the arch. But as has happened more than once in the last 40 years, federal funding was not forthcoming. High school football. Schroeder named Argenta coach by Will Foley, Argenta. It didn't take long for the Bombers football to find new leadership. Argenta Oriana is promoting T.J. Schroeder as its new head coach. Athletic Director Mike Williams confirmed Tuesday afternoon. Schroeder first joined Argenta's staff in the spring of 2024. He's been an offensive and defensive line coach for the team. A St. Cloud, Florida native, Schroeder was an offensive lineman for 4 seasons with Monmouth College. He is Argenta's middle school PE teacher. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, March 12th, 2026. Please stay tuned.